frightened him. "Nobody," he said, brutal. "All right. His whole family's dead. Oh, and Matcher too. And the horses. Better not forget the poor bloody horses, eh? All of them dead. Lying in bits and pieces on the side of Salbert's Eyrie. Now, were there anything else you wanted to know?" A thin, disbelieving moan escaped Darren's alarmingly blue lips. His fingers unlaced, clutched at his chest. He began to sag at the knees. Asher leapt at him. "Don't you dare, you fart, you bugger, you silly cross-eyed crow! Don't you bloody dare!" Grunting with the effort, he lowered Darren to the tiled foyer floor and wrenched open the sober black coat and the waistcoat beneath, scrabbled at the old man's plain cravat, loosening its knot, then tugged open the pristine white shirt. The old fool's chest heaved for air, thin as a toast rack covered with a tea towel. There were tears in his eyes, welling and welling like a magic fountain. He needed a pillow or something to rest on. Asher looked around, grabbed a cushion from the solitary foyer chair, and rescued Darren's head from the floor. Then, helpless, he chewed at his lip. Now what? He weren't a pother. He had no idea what to do next. Dim-witted old fart, sending away all the staff, even the messenger boys. He grabbed Darren's right arm, shoved back the coat and shirt sleeves, and chafed the blue-veined wrist, thin and pale and knobbly. "Come on now," he said desperately. "There's been enough debt around here for one day, you old crow. Gar won't thank you for pegging out on him. He's to be king now. He'll need you for that. If you ain't here to keep him organised, they might ask Willer, and that little sea slug couldn't organise a piss-up in a brewery." Darren tried to frown. His lips worked soundlessly for a moment. Then he whispered, "Willer, my assistant, you show respect." "That's more like it," he said, grinning with relief. "Just you lie there and breathe, Meister Scarecrow. In and out, in and out, and don't you dare think of stopping." Darren's eyes fluttered closed, but his chest continued to rise and fall. Asher released the old man's wrist and sat back on his heels. He could feel sweat trickling down his spine and gluing his hair to his scalp. He needed a bath and food. His empty belly growled at the thought. But bloody Darren had sent the cook away. He'd have to risk her wrath and raid the kitchen for whatever was lying about. And he would, too, just as soon as he could be sure Darren wasn't going to cause him even more trouble than usual by dying. Then he looked up, because the tower doors were swinging open. It was Gar, on his own 2 feet and walking. A step behind him, Conroy Geralt. They saw Darren and halted.
"Oh, save me," said Gar, looking and sounding like a man who'd lost his last hope of happiness.
"Is he?"
"No," he said, scrambling off the floor.
"What are you doing here? You're supposed to be on your way to see Nix."
"I came to tell Darren what happened." He spared Geralt an accusing glance, then said, "Aye, well, I already told him. Can you get him to Nix? Now?" Not looking at Geralt, Gar nodded. "My lord?" In searing silence, Geralt helped Asher get the groggy old man out to the waiting carriage. Gar followed behind, somehow managing to keep his own self upright. "You need me?" said Asher, once Darren was settled against the plush velvet cushions and Gar had climbed in beside him. "Yes," said Gar.
"Ride with the coachman," said Geralt curtly, and climbed into the carriage.
Biting his tongue, Asher obeyed. The Royal Infirmary was located in a wing off the palace's main building, with its own driveway and entrance, and courtyard for privacy and peace. Willing hands assisted Darren inside, offered to help Gar and were coldly rebuffed. No longer required, Geralt departed with little more than a correct bow. Gar nodded austere thanks,
Asher heaved a sigh of relief, and the infirmary assistants barely noticed. A carry chair was produced for the ailing old man to rest in, and a couple of servants summoned to do the carrying. A spare potha, hastily produced, took one look at Darren and Gar, tut-tutted, and trotted them off to the person who knew best how to handle difficult patients. Asher, hovering close by Gar in case of another collapse, prayed hard under his breath for strength. The smells in this place were making his head swim. If he didn't get out of here sooner rather than later, the infirmary's manky bone botherers were going to have one more patient on their hands. After a short trip along narrow, quiet corridors, they found Nick standing in some kind of three-sided reception area, complete with desk and chairs and several potted plants. There was a closed door in each wall, each painted a different color, blue, green, and deep crimson. The royal potha stood before the crimson door, washing his bloodied hands in a basin held by one assistant, while dictating notes to another.
"Twice hourly, with a goodly compound of ervil, goat's foot and stranglepus rubbed well into the unstitched wounds,"
Nix recited, his eyes half closed in thought. Reaching for the towel draped over the basin holder's forearm, he pursed his lips.
"For the stitched wounds, dust every 4 hours with powdered grassel. In an hour we'll..."
Suddenly aware of a wider audience, he stopped drying his hands and refocused his attention. Saw Darren slumped in the carry chair, tossed aside the towel and went to him.
"Well?" said Gar.
Nix looked up from his gentle examination.
"He'll do."
"And,
Nix turned to the basin holder.
"Wolf, fetch Potha Tobin."
To the chair carriers he said,
"Take His Highness's secretary into the green chamber."
"Tobin?"
said Gar, watching Darren's departure.
"No, I want you to..."
"Tobin will see you're Darren right, never fear," said Nix. "He's had a heart spasm, but he's in no immediate danger."
"Very well," said Gar after a moment.
"Then take me to Derm." Nix shook his head.
"Not yet."
Beneath the churning pain in Gar's eyes, a flare of heat.
"It wasn't a request, Nix."
"Not yet," said Nix stubbornly. "He needs quiet, not company. Think of him, sir, not yourself."
Asher risked a touch to Gar's rigid, uninjured arm.
"Derm's in good hands. Get yourself seen to. You're set to fall arse over eyeballs any moment."
Gar's glance was like a whiplash.
"Did I ask you?"
"No,"
said Asher, holding his ground.
"Don't mean I'm wrong, though."
Nix held out his hand.
"Come, Your Highness."
His voice was gentle now, coaxing.
"Let me heal you, and then I'll take you to Derm."
Swaying on his feet, Gar capitulated, allowed himself to be led away like a docile child. Uninvited, Asher followed. Chapter 3. Nix led the way to his book-lined, herb-infested office. The chamber's air was thick with hints of potions past, reluctantly swallowed. Cheerful flames leapt in a small fireplace. The room was stiflingly warm.
"Right then,"
he said, planting himself between desk and scarred workbench.
"Now that we're beyond sight and sound of nuisance, let's see the truth of the matter, shall we, Your Highness? Time to strip, please. Down to your skin."
Too battered and weary for further protest, Gar let Nix and Asher between them ease him out of his hasty bandages and ruined blood-stained clothes. With memories of his own past hurts resurfacing, Asher was as gentle as he could be, wincing as the full extent of Gar's injuries were revealed. Breathing unevenly, Gar cradled his left arm with his right hand and waited for the ordeal to end.
"Humph,"
said the potha, inspecting the prints like a man at a horse auction. A frown pinched his bushy grey and yellow eyebrows together as his blunt fingers skimmed the surface of Gar's insulted body, marking each cut, each scrape, each ripening bruise. Air hissed between Gar's clenched teeth as Nix's fingers lightly traced the irregular line of the broken collarbone. He felt Gar's skull, took his pulse, listened to his heartbeat and breathing, checked the coating on his tongue and the clarity of his eyes.
"Any idea how long you were stunned out of your senses?"
"No," said Gar. "I remember, I think I remember, flying through the air, hitting the ground. I know I woke twice, tried to get up, go for help. I couldn't even stand."
"It were mid-morning when you left," said Asher, "and dusk when me and Matt found you."
"Humph," said Nix.
"A goodly brain rattling then. You'll need a day or three in bed to guard against conniptions."
"Bed?" Gar pulled a face.
"I think not. Did you know I have an excellent cure for an argumentative patient, sir?" Nix asked, eyes narrowed. "It involves needle, thread, and meals sucked through a straw."
"Spare me your dubious wit," retorted Gar. "Your king is dead and his heir with him. It falls to me now to continue his legacy. Do you tell me I can do so from my bed?"
Suddenly pale and with tears in his eyes, Nix jabbed Gar's chest with a pointed finger.
"I tell you, sir, that as Royal Partha, I am charged with the gravest responsibility, the care of this kingdom's physical well-being in the body of its weather worker. With Born's death, may Baal keep him. That body is now yours. From this day forth, you belong to Lur first and foremost, and in the pursuit of my sacred duty as your Partha, I will allow you no secrets, grant you no privacies, spare you no shame, and brook no argument. If I say you must rest, you will rest, for upon your health depends the welfare of Baal's Wall and the kingdom it protects, the lives of every last man, woman, and child. Because of this, your health is my kingdom, and in this room, I am king. Do you understand?"
As Gar stared at Nix in silent shock, Asher sighed.
"He's right. And no, you didn't ask me. I didn't have to," said Gar. His voice was a strangled whisper. "Of course he's right."
Gentle again, Nix lightly touched Gar's shoulder.
"Sit, sir, while I collect what's needful."
There was a chair close by. Asher helped Gar into it, then stood back. More than anything, he wanted to drape himself over the desk or lean against a handy stretch of wall, but protocol dictated otherwise, and Nix would probably throw something at him for making a mess. The Partha went to his office door, pulled it 3 inches wide, and barked through the opening,
"Carol! Fetch me a quarter cup of Janjivet, with 2 drops of dersal root essence added after pouring. Also a measure of bee blossom. Quickly!"
While he waited for his subordinate to bring him the requested potions, Nix rummaged in a cupboard and withdrew 4 cork-sealed pots, a bluestone mortar and pestle, and a small clear vial of something green and viscous. After depositing them on the crowded bench, he rolled up his dangling sleeves and got to work. The smell as he pounded each ingredient in the pestle was vile. Gar stirred, looked up, his expression apprehensive.
"You expect me to swallow that?"
A tap on the door indicated Carol's return.
"No,"
replied Nix as he pushed the door shut and handed Gar one of the cups Carol had given him.
"This."
Gar sniffed the liquid suspiciously.
"What is it?"
"Something to dull the pain while I fix that broken collarbone," said Nix, standing over him. "Bone knitting's not the gentlest of healing magic."
The Partha's expression was sympathetic, but unyielding. Gar spared him a single burning look, then shuddered and tossed the potion down his throat.
"Baal's mercy!"
he gasped and started gagging.
"Are you trying to poison me?"
"I'd advise you not to vomit, sir," said Nix, returning to his mortar and pestle.
He added the bee blossom and resumed pounding.
"You only have to drink another lot, and I'm told it tastes even worse the second time.
Now just sit quietly while it takes effect, and I finish this ointment."
Still gagging, Gar dropped the cup and hunched over, fisted fingers pressed to his mouth. A few moments later, Nix was ready. Eyes closed, words whispering under his breath, the Pother laid his hands on Gar's broken collarbone. At his touch, a spark of light ignited, became a flame. His fingers began to dance up and down the bone's irregular length, drumming lightly, and the flame danced with them. Asher had never seen a Dorinan bone knitting before, although he had friends who'd required it after a squall off Tatler's Ear Cove rattled them like thrown knuckle bones from bow to stern in their fishing smack. "Hurt like blazes," Beb and Joffet had told him with identical grimacing shudders. Clearly, Gar would agree. Even with the pain-dulling potion, his face was salty white and shiny with sweat, and his breathing came hard and harsh. Small grunts escaped him, and his right hand spasmed on the arm of the chair.
"Nearly done,"
Nix murmured. The flame beneath his fingers was a furnace now. Asher imagined he could feel the heat of it in his own flesh, and winced.
"Take a nice deep breath," said Nix, "and hold, hold, hold."
With a final burst of light and a sharp command, the broken bone beneath the Pother's hands snapped back into place. Gar shouted and would have flung himself out of the chair if Nix hadn't restrained him. Flinching in sympathy, Asher watched the healer cradle Gar hard against the magic's tormenting aftermath, patting his back and clucking like an old hen.
There now, that's the worst over, I swear it."
Slowly, Gar recovered, straightened, and pushed Nix away. "I'm fine. Stop fussing," he muttered. Nix returned to his bench and retrieved the mortar of stinking ointment.
"Stand up for me, Your Highness. We'll just test that arm first, then take care of your bumps and scrapes."
His breathing still a little unsteady, Gar stood, lifted his arm above his head, waved it in circles, clenched his hand to a fist and pulled his elbow light to his side.
"Excellent," said Nix. "Another day and you'll never know it was damaged. Now for the rest of you."
In swift silence, he daubed his pungent green concoction onto Gar's hurts. Seconds after touching the damaged flesh, it melted out of sight. The dried blood faded, and with it the ointment's eye-watering smell. A thin protective film now coated each wound.
"There,"
said Nix at last.
"Better?"
Gar touched cautious fingertips to his cut forehead, pressed them against his torn hip, thigh, ribs. "Better." He let his hand rest on Nix's arm for a moment. "My thanks," Nix nodded.
"You'll take the ointment with you, applying it morning and night for 3 days. You'll be healed by then."
"Yes," said Gar. "I'll do that. But as for staying in bed, Nix..." The Pother heaved a disgruntled sigh.
"I know, I know. The burden of kingship cannot be laid down."
He turned to Asher.
"I charge you to keep a close eye on him. Send for me at the slightest suspicion of weakness or collapse."
Asher nodded. "I will. And now," said Gar,
"I will see Derm."
Asher looked at him sidelong.
"Dressed like that?"
Gar's reply was to close his eyes, frame 4 silent words with still colourless lips, and with the fingers of his left hand, trace in the chamber's warm air a complicated sigil. 2 heartbeats later, he was holding shirt, trews, and a waistcoat in his arms. The effort dropped him back to the chair.
"You didn't let me finish," said Nix, reproving. "No magic for a week."
Stippled with sweat, Gar shook his head.
"I must. The weather working..." "We'll wait. Schedules can be adjusted. Performing magic in your condition could cripple you."
cripple. It was a word laden with bitter memory.
Fine, Gar said curtly. Shakily he stood again and, with slow deliberation, began to dress.
Nix busied himself emptying the rest of the mortar's ointment into a small jar.
And you, Asher? He said. There's blood on your hands.
Asher looked. True, there was. Not all of it his, though. Most of it not his. But how could he say that in Gar's hearing? He shrugged.
Scraped knuckles. I'm fine.
Show me.
He shoved his hands under Nix's nose. The pother and his experienced gaze over the cuts, dabbed them with ointment, then stoppered the jar with a cork and held it out.
There's enough here for you two. Both of you use it, or I'll know the reason why.
Asher looked up from his tingling hands.
Yes, sir.
Behind them, Gar fastened the last button on his waistcoat.
Derm,
he said. His face and voice brooked no opposition.
Now.
Partha Tobin was waiting for them in the reception area. When she saw Gar, she bowed.
Your secretary is resting comfortably, Your Highness. He's been given a good strong dose of heartsease and should be well enough for visitors come the morning.
Gar nodded.
My thanks.
As the Partha bowed again, retreating, he turned to Nix.
Where is Derm?
Nix nodded at the reception area's crimson door.
In there. But before you see him, I must caution you. His injuries are grave, his appearance unsettling. I have done all I can for him. What happens now is up to his constitution and Baal's mercy.
Gar didn't reply immediately. His gaze wandered round the hushed reception area for long moments, touching on the bright painted doors, the windowless walls, the potted plants. His expression was distant, unmoved.
Will he live?
Nix pursed his lips.
I'm a healer, sir, not a soothsayer.
There was a pother in Derm's room, seated in a chair beside the patient's bed. She stood as they entered the windowless chamber. Glimfire sconces threw small shadows onto the cream-coloured walls, and a fire kept any chill at bay. At a signal from Nix, she left them, closing the crimson door behind her. Supported by mysterious pother magic, Derm floated some 8 inches above a high, wide platform fitted on all four sides with wooden railings. To Asher it seemed there wasn't a single square inch of the man's naked skin that wasn't stitched or stained or stretched with splints. Indeed, the massive head wound was embroidered so thickly his hairless scalp looked infested with caterpillars. His eyes, once as cold and piercing as spears of ice, were now invisible, consumed by the bloated purple flesh of his face. Gar checked when he saw him, one hand coming up in a fierce denial.
"Baal have mercy," he whispered,
a small wounded sound in the silence.
"If I didn't know it was him,"
he managed a step closer.
"Why haven't you knitted his bones, Nix? You can't leave him broken like this."
"Bone knitting would most likely kill him," said Nix. "We'll get to that, in time."
"If he lives."
The words hung unspoken between them. "His stupor?"
"A result of the head injury. It is severe."
"Will he wake?"
"Perhaps."
"With his wits?"
Nix shrugged.
"Unknown."
"How long? Before he wakes? Before you do know?"
Nix frowned, but answered,
"Days, certainly. Most likely weeks."
Reluctantly, Gar dragged his gaze away from the monstrosity hovering over the bed.
"But not months. It can't be months, Nix. The weather working. My succession. This kingdom needs him. I need him."
"I know that," said Nix. "And if he can be healed, sir, I will heal him and return him to you."
"If?"
Nix sighed and clasped his hands behind his back.
the unspoken words would have to be spoken.
You must forgive my plain speaking, Your Highness, but I see no point in prevarication. To be blunt, I hold little hope.
Gar's face was chilled and chalk white. Staring wide-eyed at Derm, he said, But little is not the same as none.
No, Nix replied after a cautious pause. No, it's not.
Asher watched as Gar moved to Derm's bedside like a man entranced. When the prince spoke, his voice was the merest thread.
I loved him once, and then I hated him. Now I don't know what I feel.
He fell silent, struggling for words.
Except fear. I've known him all my life. He is as much my family as my father, my mother, my sister. If he dies, I am truly alone.
He sounded bereft, knifed to the soul. Nick stepped forward and rested his hand on Gar's shoulder.
No, sir,
he said, his voice rough with tears.
Not alone. Never alone while there is breath in my body.
Asher cleared his throat, banished tears of his own.
Da. Da.
Nor mine, he added. Gar, let's go. There ain't nothing you can do for Derm, and you need sleep. Gar's stricken gaze continued to feast on the unconscious master magician.
No, no, I can't leave him.
Nix's fingers tightened.
You can't stay, he said gently. Indeed, your presence might well hinder, not help. I will send for you the moment there is any change.
For a moment, Asher thought Gar would fight them. Then the prince, the king, sighed deeply, touched two fingertips to his lips and pressed them lightly to Derm's cheek.
Come back to me, Derm, he whispered. I can't go on without you.
Then he let Nix shepherd him to the chamber's crimson door. Asher followed them out and didn't look back. Trapped in his prison of spoiled and spoiling flesh, Morg screams and screams. Wherever he is not alone. There are voices somewhere close, nearby, but they click-clack on the edge of hearing and he cannot reach them or understand what they say. Struggling like a spider tangled in its own web, he battles to make sense of this new reality. Derm's body is broken and bleeding. Only his own indomitable will keeps the fat fool's flesh alive, his spirit from oblivion. The sluggish blood is soaked in drugs, enveloping and deadening and holding him fast. But still he is assaulted by pain. It is centuries since last he felt such a sensation. It is insulting. His predicament is insulting. He is Morg, far beyond the pettiness of physicality in all its incarnations, yet he is caught. Against every expectation and in the face of all his power, he is bound to this lump of sundered meat, shackled to its fate, slave to its destiny. If Derm dies, he dies. The shock is enough to threaten his reason. How can this be? He wails. I am Morg. I am invincible. Death, his bitter and once beaten enemy, is laughing at him, waiting in the shadows and laughing. It rubs its greedy hands with glee as it waits for the fat fool's body to die, for the spell to fail. And so release Morg's spirit to destruction.
No, cries Morg. You have not won. I will not die. I am Morg, and my name means victory. You cannot defeat me. You will never defeat me.
There is a way. There has to be a way. Am I not immortal? Immortal beings cannot die. I cannot die.
Yes, you can, says Death. In this place and time, you can. Morg knows Death speaks the truth and despairs. For the first time in centuries, he is desperate. Faced with circumstances he did not create and cannot control. For the first time in centuries, he feels fear. The damage done to this borrowed body is dire. Even with his vast powers, it still might plunge into death's greedy abyss, taking him with it. And if not, if he does manage to keep the fat fool alive, what if Derm is permanently crippled? His faculties deranged. If the Pothers cannot mend this broken frame, it will be no use at all. What then? Will he be forced to endure eternity inside Derm's ruined body? Morg howls at the thought, twisting and turning and beating the bars of his cage. Derm's sickly flesh rebels at his fury. The failing heart fails further, and the laboring lungs deflate. Panicked, Morg abandons profitless emotion and focuses his will. Beat, heart! Breathe, lungs! Resentfully, dying Derm obeys him. Morg reflects. He is in this place for one reason only. To tear down Baal's wall in all its golden glory, and grind her treacherous heart's descendants into the dirt so he might claim the last square inches of the world for his own. To do that, he needs a host, and if Derm can no longer serve that purpose, he must find another host who can. Another host. He has no idea if such a transfer is even possible.
I will make it possible, vows Morg. I am limitless, and I will finish what I started. After that, Fat Derm can die, and welcome, along with all his friends.
Time marches, and with it the events he has set in motion. Soon the black-toed magic planted within the cripple's mind will warp, and shrivel, and die. He must be there to see it. He must be alive to savor the moment, nectar on the tongue, and birth the bloody days that will usher in the end of the world as these poor fools have known it.
I am Morg, he sighs, immortal and invincible. I feel no pain. I feel no fear.
Reaching out his mind, he wraps the fraying thread of Derm's life around his fisted intellect and bends his will towards eternity.
Live, Derm,
he croons into the echoing spaces around him.
Live, fat fool, for I am Morg, and I'm not done with you yet.
Matt sighed, then stretched his back. It had taken far longer than he'd thought, but at last the injured colt was plucked free of splinters, sticky with ointments, and drowsing in the deep straw of its stable. Finally done with physicking, he smoothed his hand down an unspoiled length of dappled grey neck, then leaned against the nearest wall. He was alone now, and waiting, all the lads dismissed for the night. It was just him and his horses, the way he liked it best. The colt flicked its ears at him, and he stroked it again, seeking comfort in the warmth of living flesh beneath his hand. Pushed far away where he couldn't feel it, pain lurked like a wolf in the woods. All the royal family save Gar was dead, and tomorrow the city would wake to a world unimagined. What this meant for him and Daphne, for Vera and the rest of the circle, for Gar, for Asher, he had no idea. He was too tired now to think of it, too tired and too afraid.
The shadows in his life had crept much closer, were touching him now with chilly darkness and surprise. He'd been looking for them, and still they'd caught him unawares. Silence settled inside the stable and out. Matt closed his eyes and let himself settle with it. Let himself breathe, just breathe, and sought out the subtle shift and sway of the energies swirling invisible through the night air, unfurled his gift and asked it to taste the flux and flow of magics in the world. Something was different. Something was missing. Frowning, he tried to pin down the sensation. What was its cause? Not death, though the death of King Born was momentous. Powerful Doranan had died before now, and he'd not detected any great change in the world. The silence their passing created was soon smothered by the voices left behind. No, this had something to do with the other change he'd felt, the one that had stood the hair on the back of his neck in a kind of creeping horror the first time he'd noticed it. The one he couldn't begin to explain to Daphne or himself. A single discordant note in the choir of Lur's magic, thin and sharp and sour. Poison to a man with his knack of feeling the world. That note had fallen silent. After weeks of hearing its soft, malevolent voice, he'd almost grown accustomed. Its sudden absence now sounded louder than a shout. But why? Why had it disappeared as abruptly as first it arrived? Entirely disconcerted, he stretched his senses to their limits in an effort to find the answer. An edgily amused voice said, "You look like a man sniffing milk to see if it's gone off." Matt sighed and opened his eyes. Daphne. Small and straight in the stable doorway, her head and shoulders covered in a green wool shawl, she raised her eyebrows. "Your call through the crystal sounded shrill. What's happened?" The colt stirred, disquieted by their voices. Matt soothed it with a touch and murmured reassurance, then eased his way out of the stable. The lamp-lit yard was hushed, just the normal sounds of horses in their beds and owls in the surrounding trees, hooting. His lads were upstairs in the dormitory, sleeping or playing cards. It was safe to talk. Even so, he kept his voice down. "Born's dead. The queen too. And Fane. Durham as good as and might not last the night." Shocked silence. In her face a wealth of surprise, which meant she hadn't dreamed this. Strangely, he was comforted. If she'd known and kept it from him. "Javale, defend us," she said at last, her voice a fervent whisper.
"How?"
"An accident."
"And what of Gar?"
"He's injured too, but in no danger."
She seemed unable to grasp the enormity of it. He was having some trouble there himself. She said, still stunned,
"They're dead? You're certain?"
He shrugged.
"Asher is. He saw them for himself and told me."
"Asher saw?"
Her thin face blanched. "He was there? Involved? Is he injured? Is he..." He put a hand on her shoulder to calm her.
"He's fine."
She shook her head, tugged her shawl tight.
"Tell me everything."
When he was finished, she stepped closer, her face flushed with angry colour, and shoved him hard in the chest.
"You fool! What were you thinking, letting him do anything so rash, so dangerous? Climbing into Salbert's eyrie? That's madness! What if he'd fallen? What if he was lying there dead like the rest of them? What then?"
He caught her hands as she lifted them to shove him a second time.
"I tried to stop him, but he was determined and I had no good reason to keep on arguing. Not one I could share. You bade me hold my tongue, remember?"
She pulled free.
"So it's my fault? Why didn't you go climbing down there yourself?"
"I offered, but he wouldn't listen. Daphne, why are we fighting? He isn't dead.
No, but he could be. You had no right to risk him.
And you haven't risked him, he retorted. By not telling him what he should know of himself? And that business with the fireworks in Balladare the day we first met, you don't think that was risking him?
That was different, and you know it. I had to put him in the prince's way. I had to get him into the usurper's house.
And I had to let him see if any of the royal family were left alive, he said, or risk stirring his suspicions. Asher was beside himself, Dath, ready to go right through me. What would you have done if you'd been there instead of me?
Furious, resenting his logic, she glared up into his impatient face. Then, without warning, her hot gaze shifted, focused somewhere behind him, melted into relief and sorrow, and something else, something he didn't want or dare to think about. He turned, knowing already who it was he'd see. Asher. Trailing into the yard like a man at the end of a week's marching over unforgiving ground. He heard her gasp, stepped aside and watched her go to him, stand before him, thin and worn with worry.
"Matt's told me," she said. "Are you all right?"
The question seemed to surprise Asher, as though the last thing he expected was concern for himself. He shrugged.
"Aye."
"And the prince?"
"He'll live. I've put him to bed up in the tower.
Praise Baal."
She looked at her feet and then into his face.
"And it's true? They're really dead?"
"Aye,"
he said again.
"They're really dead."
As though speaking the words out loud were some kind of catalyst, his stolid composure fractured. His face crumpled, lost years, became the face of a boy in unbearable pain. Matt felt his own face twist in sympathy. Daphne held out her arms and welcomed Asher to her breast. He went to her gladly, fiercely, holding her like a man in fear of falling. Her holding of him was no less desperate. The sight of their embrace sank Matt's untouched heart and roused a host of fears. Daphne's face was hidden from him, and he was glad, because he could see Asher's, and it told him everything he needed to know, more than ever he'd wanted.
"Javale, have mercy,"
he said aloud, but softly, so they wouldn't hear him.
"Please, and then tell me what to do now."
Chapter 4. Asher woke the following morning fully clothed and sprawled face down across his bed. For long moments he just lay there, groping for his bearings. His head felt heavy, wooden, and his mouth tasted like barnacle scrapings. His hair was tacky with dried sweat, making his scalp itch. There was dirt under his chipped fingernails, dirt on his shirt sleeves too, along with dried blood. His back ached, and his shoulders, and his hands were scabbed with cuts.
What the?
And then a wave of memory crashed over him, tumultuous with fragmented images. Born. Dana. Fane. The dead brown carriage horse. Gar's face. Daphne. He groaned, rolling over to stare at his pale blue bedchamber ceiling. Groaned again as muttering pains roused to a roar. Everything hurt. The room tip-tilted about him, and he clutched at his blankets, waiting for it to steady right side up so he could think more clearly. After the stables and Daphne, the way she'd held him, soothed him, the warmth of her hand against his cheek and the tickling rush of her breath across his skin, he'd staggered back to the tower. Gar had demanded to be left alone, insisting he was all right, but he'd wanted to make sure. Nobody could lose their entire family in one blow and still be all right, not even a man as habitually cool and self-contained as the Prince of Lur.
But Gar had locked his suite's main doors and wouldn't answer, no matter how hard the bell rope was pulled or how loudly the carved wood was banged upon. Truth be told, he'd not been sorry. He'd had his fill of grief for one night. So he'd gone all the way downstairs and underground to the deserted tower kitchen and filled his empty belly with this and that from the cook's precious pantry. Then he'd staggered up to his room, intending to sit a while and try to think this calamity through, unravel all its implications, and decide what it might mean to himself and the kingdom. Instead, he must have fallen asleep. No reason to feel guilty, he told himself sternly. The dead were dead. The living still had to sleep, didn't they? Aye, and eat, and work, and fight, and love. Love. Daphne. Pushing the thought of her aside, because he didn't begin to know what last night might mean, and lacked the energy right now to untangle the puzzle, he sat up, swung his still-booted feet to the floor, twitched open the bedside window's curtain, and looked outside. It was late, maybe 9:30. From this high up, he could just make out the tail end of the morning's second exercise string. 6 immaculate horses heading out from the stables towards Spindley Copse. Looked like Willem bringing up the rear. The boy always liked to ride Sunburst, and he'd know the chestnut colt's broad backside anywhere. In his imagination, he heard the stable lad's laughter and scoffing catcalls as they rode out to the copse, and was greenly envious. Lucky bastards. What he wouldn't give to be one of them again, far from the glare of public service and the intimacy of lives shattered by disaster. A battering of fists against his apartment's outer doors startled him. Then came a voice, raised in impatient demand.
Asher! Asher, get out here at once!
Willa. Bastard. For one single luxurious moment, Lai contemplated deafness, or insensibility, or even self-inflicted death. Any or all were better than dealing with Willa at 9:30 in the morning on a growlingly empty stomach after a day and a night like the ones he'd just lived through. But no. Somebody had to take charge of the tower till Darren was released from Nix's clutches, and if he didn't do it, Willow would, which meant that by 11:00 he'd have everybody running around killing themselves. Scowling ferociously, he flung wide his apartment doors.
"Keep the noise down, you bloody great fool! You want to wake the prince?"
Blinding in purple satin, Willow stared at him, took one horrified breath and immediately fished for his kerchief.
"Baal, preserve me," he said through pale mauve silk. "You stink, and you're filthy. What is going on? And where is Darren? He sent all the staff home yesterday over my strenuous objections, and now he's nowhere to be found, and the maids are milling about like hens."
"Darren's been taken poorly. He..."
"Poorly?"
Willa dropped the silk kerchief and lunged.
"What do you mean? What have you done to him? I swear, Asher, I swear, if you've harmed so much as a hair on Darren's head, I'll..."
With some difficulty, Asher fended him off.
"I ain't done nowt to the old crow. Now shut your trap so's I can tell you what's what, or I'll push you head first down my water closet."
Willa hurriedly stepped back.
"Lay a finger on me, and I'll have you arrested."
"You could try,"
he said with an evil, relishing grin.
"Now listen. Seeing Darren's in his sickbed, you'll need to stand in for him today. Baal save us all."
"Of course I shall stand in for him," Willa snapped. "Who else could be entrusted with such an important task? Certainly not you."
He throttled the impulse to kick the little pissant where, on reflection, it wouldn't do much damage.
"Look, you, stop flapping your bloody lips and listen. There's an important announcement to be made on another matter,
Get the staff together in the foyer while I...
Announcement? About what? Asher, I demand you tell me.
Listen, I said. Or are you deaf as well as a dimwit? Get the staff together, groundsfolk and stable as well as tower, while I see how the prince wants to proceed. All right? Understand? Or do I have to draw you little pictures?
And who are you to give such orders?
I'm the man who's going to punch you in the nose if you don't do as you're told.
The sea slug's eyes narrowed in fury.
You have no authority over me.
Want to bet? If you don't about face right now and get the staff assembled, I'll see you dismissed and chucked out of here on your pimpled fat arse. And don't think for a moment Gar won't back me up, 'cause we both know he will.
You arrogant, insupportable bastard! One day, said Willa, wheezing with rage, there will be a reckoning for you. One day I shall strip you naked before the world, and you'll be seen for the rotten, pernicious, power-hungry...
Closing the door in Willa's face made him feel a lot better. A hot bath and some food for his empty belly would have made him feel better still, but there wasn't time for that. So he washed quickly out of his privy basin, haphazardly scraped the bristles off his face with a razor, one stroking short of sharp, brushed the worst of the sweat and dirt from his hair, hauled on clean clothing, and went upstairs to rouse Gar. This time when he knocked on the royal suite's front doors, they swung open on soundless hinges. There was nobody on the other side. Smart arse, he muttered, and entered. Crossed the empty sun-stripped foyer and took the stairs up to Gar's bedchamber. With a brief knuckle rap on the closed door, he opened it and was confronted with darkness. Gar, you in here? All the bedroom's curtains were drawn. Only the merest silver of sunshine slid between them to leaven the gloom. Asher banged and bruised and cursed his way to the nearest window and pulled back the brocade hangings. If I'd wanted light, said Gar, I would have made some. He was slumped in an overstuffed armchair, still dressed in the clothes he'd pulled on last night in Derm's office. His pale, hollow cheeks were stubbled with gold. Grief was smeared into dark shadows beneath his half-closed eyes. The sumptuous bed was unslept in. Asher crossed his arms and bumped his backside onto the windowsill. When Nick said rest, I think he meant in a bed. And if I'd wanted company, Gar added, eyebrows lowering, I would have sent for someone. He shrugged. Darren says a good servant anticipates his employer's wishes. Gar let his bruised, unbandaged head fall against the padded chair back. I'm sure he does. But since when do you give a fat rat's fart what Darren has to say?
I don't.
How are you feeling? Collarbone all right? Gar lifted his left arm, waved it overhead, and let it drop back to his lap.
Fine. Your bumps and bruises? Also fine. Nix is an excellent physician.
Good.
An awkward silence fell. Asher took refuge in it, frowning at the carpet. Gar looked bad, brittle, as though one word too many, one breath too deep, would shatter him. But he couldn't say nothing. He looked up, felt his eyes burn, his throat tighten. With eyes wide open, saw again the blood. The bodies. He took a deep breath and let it out shakily. Gar, about yesterday. Your family. I...
Don't! Said Gar, one hand swiftly raised. I can't afford your sympathy, Asher. Not now. Not yet.
He blinked.
Oh, if you want to help, then help me stay strong.
I can do that. A little of the bleakness eased from Gar's face.
Thank you.
He pushed to his feet.
Now I must make myself presentable. The staff. I got them waiting downstairs. Will you make the announcement? Or do you want me to? I'll do it. Tell them I'll be with them shortly, would you? He pulled off his waistcoat and tossed it over the back of the armchair. Give me 10 minutes. Nodding, Asher slid off the windowsill, started for the chamber door, hesitated, and turned back. Gar. Impatient, Gar glanced at him.
What?
Still hesitant, he took another step closer. Brittle or not, grieving or not, there were things Gar needed to hear. Things that couldn't wait. Nix may be a good pother, but he ain't got the power to make a man live if his body's hurt past healing, or mend a mind that's broken. I know this is hard, but... Gar paused in the middle of undoing his buttons, his eyes abruptly cold. No.
You don't know what I'm going to say yet.
I know exactly what you're going to say, Gar replied, and returned to his unbuttoning. The answer is no. I have a master magician.
Gar,
he closed the gap between them a little more.
I know Derm's your family now, but you can't let that make your choices for you.
Gar stripped off his shirt and threw it at the chair. Despite Nix's stinking green ointment, his torso looked like a mad painter's palette. I'm not.
You are. You got to look at this the way the people will, he insisted. All your life they've known you as Gar the Magicless, Gar the Cripple, and it never mattered because there was your dad and your sister, two of the best magicians this kingdom's ever seen. The smallest spratling in Restarva knew the kingdom was safe because of them.
The kingdom is still safe, retorted Gar, stung. I am Gar the Magicless no longer.
I know, but it's only been weeks. Weeks, Gar, after all those years. Folks have barely got used to the idea that you're a magician, and now you want them to see you as king? As weather worker? You may be as powerful as Fane ever was, but you're not trained. Not the way you should be. You said it yourself. Derm still had so much to teach you.
And he shall teach me, said Gar, eyes bright with temper. As soon as he recovers.
You don't know he will.
And you don't know he won't, snapped Gar. Unless we are now to number physicking amongst your many talents. Asher shoved his hands in his pockets, sorry he'd ever opened his mouth. But he had, and it was too late now to take back what he'd said. I ain't the one holding out little hope, Gar. That's Nix. His words, not mine. You can't pretend otherwise just because...
I'm not pretending anything,
said Gar, and turned his back. And neither am I continuing this conversation. The subject is closed. Asher reached out, grabbed Gar by the arm and spun him around. No, it ain't. Like it or not, you have to face facts. You need a master magician. You can't leap into weatherworking on your own without some other trained magician to guide you. It's too difficult. Too dangerous. You can't... Gar raised a warning finger. Say I can't to me one more time, and I promise you'll be sorry. Sorrier than if you charge pig-headed into weatherworking and bring the wall crashing down around our ears, he said, ignoring the raised finger and the dangerous light in Gar's eyes, and everything save the need to make the fool see sense. I don't think so.
I have no intention of destroying Baal's wall, retorted Gar. Or of appointing Conroy Geralt my master magician. You have to. Who else is there powerful enough to manage the job? You have to appoint him master magician, even if it's only for a while. Until Derm gets better, since you're so sure he won't die or wake up an addled wreck. Cause if you don't, you try weatherworking alone without help, and something goes wrong, that more than likely means you'll be dead. And Geralt'll be king, and then what'll the rest of us do?
Are you deaf? Cried Gar. I will not do it. I have a master magician. No, Gar. What you've got is a lump of bloody meat held together with catgut and pothering and prayers, and you can't...
Enough!
Gar shouted, livid with pain. His arm came up, fingers fisted, and the room was filled with furious power. Asher felt the magic hit him, felt it lift him and toss him like a bundle of kindling on fire from the inside out. He flew backwards, hit the bed, bounced off it again, slammed into the wall, then slid into a crumpled heap on the carpet. Every sleeping bruise woke and started screaming. Deafened, he lay there, feeling warm blood trickle from his nose, his mouth, smelling scorched air. Beneath the pain, there was fear. Bleached white and still as stone, Gar stared back at him, watched as he groped his way to his feet and half sat, half collapsed onto the bed, watched as he touched the blood on his face and considered his crimsoned fingertips. Asher, he said at last. Asher lifted a hand, and Gar fell silent, turned on his heel and disappeared into his privy closet. There came the sound of water running into a basin, the opening and closing of a cupboard. Then he came out again carrying the basin and a soft white cloth, closed the immeasurable distance between them, and waited. Silently Asher took basin and cloth and cleaned his face of blood. The sharp pounding pain subsided, but the fear remained, translated slowly into anger. Still unspeaking, he handed back the basin and stained white cloth, stood and pushed past Gar to stand once more at the window. His bones ached. Looking outside, he saw a horse and rider draw to a halt in the tower's front courtyard, saw a liveried servant, Daniel, appear and take the animal's reins. He knew that horse, knew its rider, too. Pelinorix here, he said, not turning around. Asher, I'll go down and see what he wants while you finish tidying yourself, ready to speak to the staff. After that, you'd best get over to the infirmary, see how Derm's doing this morning. And Darren, the old man'll howl like a girl if you don't make a fuss over him. Take him some flowers and a box of sweetmeats.
Asher!
Still, he refused to turn round. Couldn't trust what his face might show. Reckon that'll be the first and last time you ever raise a hand to me, Gar. Reckon you do it again, with magic or without, and that'll be the end of that. Subdued, his voice small in the large round room, Gar said, Yes, Asher. I'm sorry. Forgive me. Now he risked revealing his face, looked at Gar for long moments and saw that the prince's contrition was genuine. He nodded. You're grieving. That's no excuse. He didn't want to talk about it, wanted to forget it had happened, forget that this Gar, Magician Gar, wasn't the man he'd made friends with.